But first, the Somali-born activist Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Though she was raised a devout Muslim, Hirsi Ali later sought asylum in the Netherlands and was elected to the Dutch parliament. Eventually, she renounced Islam and turned into an outspoken atheist. Hirsi Ali became widely known when her filmmaker partner Theo van Gogh was murdered in Amsterdam after they made a film that blasted Islam's treatment of women. She herself received death threats and spent months in hiding. After returning to public life, Hirsi Ali wrote the best-selling memoir Infidel. And now she's written another book called Nomad, which argues that fundamentalist Islam poses a serious threat to the West. Hirsi Ali told Anne Strainchamps that her fierce criticism of religion grew out of her own mind-bending journey.
It's a journey that takes me from being a believer in what my father and mother teach me is the difference between right and wrong. And the morality for that was derived from Islam. The first 22 years of my life, I used the Quran and Muhammad as a moral compass. And gradually, I found myself shifting, drifting away to something else, to liberalism, individual rights, freedoms, the idea that I didn't need one book to take answers from, but that I could use my reason to distinguish between right and wrong. That is the mental journey.
Could you tell me something about your own family upbringing? I mean, how would you describe the way your parents raised you and your siblings?
I have an idea that we came as children to my parents as accidents. I say that only in retrospect and comparing them to Western parents who go about planning and planning and planning when the first child comes, when the second child comes, etc. My mother, after she married my father, was pregnant every year, every other year. She lost many of those pregnancies and some of the children didn't make it to adulthood. Three of us did. And of those three of us who did it, we were continuously told by my grandmother that we have to be loyal to the bloodline. She tried to teach us that, to learn the bloodline by heart, but also to be loyal to them. And her definition of loyalty was, given the fact that I was a girl, my loyalty was to preserve and conserve and guard my chastity. And it seemed as if to my grandmother the only goal was, by the time I reached maturity, which in her vision is 15 years of age, I would then have to find the right husband. And that husband would protect me, but all I had to do was submit to him. And the husband and I would produce children for the clan. So our loyalty, our life was completely devoted to carrying the bloodline one generation further. Now, how do you keep individuals behaving themselves? Most of that was enforced with Islamic rule. And the question that was used to blackmail us from day to day was, when you are standing in front of your God in the hereafter, would you like to be thrown into permanent hell or into permanent heaven? And that is a very, very compelling deterrent from sin. And sin, as I later came to understand it, was almost everything that Western society stood for, cherished, and invested in.
So you're describing an upbringing which was, in many ways, a kind of tribal upbringing. The primary loyalty was to your bloodline, to your clan.
I got into, when I was in the Netherlands, the confusion of, if I want to stay loyal to the bloodline, I can't integrate into Dutch society, be individualized, follow Dutch language classes, educate myself, make my own money and save it. Every activity that I did to integrate into Dutch society, almost every single activity entailed that I was somehow directly or indirectly betraying the blood clan and my religion. As I spent more time in Holland and got acquainted with other Muslims from other countries like Morocco, like Turkey, like Afghanistan, Iraq, Azerbaijan, I realized that we were all facing the same dilemma.
But there are plenty of Muslim women in the U.S. who have made that transition, who are now professional women, teachers, lawyers, doctors, magazine editors, scientists, and who also are observant Muslims.
Oh, that's not what I mean. It is very much possible to leave a chaotic place, find an occupation in the West, follow it through, and enjoy it. Problems only arise if the bloodline or the faith appeal to you to do something that, in your conscience and in the new society that you're serving, contradicts one another. I think the latest and most famous example is the young man who tried to blow up Times Square. He came on a student visa in search of the American dream. He demonstrated that he was capable of getting into university and passing his exams. He married an American woman. But when the forces of the bloodline and Islamism appealed to him, that got him into a state of confusion. And for him to get out of that state of confusion, out of that state of dissonance, he heeded what the Prophet Muhammad instructs him to do, at least what the jihadists tell him that they do, and gave up his job, took his wife and children to Pakistan, went to Pakistan to train for all kinds of terrorist activities, and in fact went on to carry out a terrorist activity. Now, I'm not saying he is the average Muslim, but I'm saying for those individuals who are very conscientious like he is, when they're confronted with predicaments like, where do I belong? Am I a citizen or am I a Muslim first?
Surely there's also more than one kind of Islam. I mean, aren't there plenty of Muslims who consider the Quran's teachings to be about peace and tolerance and who regard the teachings of Islamist groups to be a perversion of their religion?
The overwhelming majority of Muslims have not read the Quran. If they have, they've read it in Arabic, which is not their first language. Most Muslims live in despotic nations. The average Muslim's day-to-day life is one that is made up of how do I survive? But there is an activism financed by countries like Saudi Arabia and wealthy individuals living in Saudi Arabia who made money out of oil, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates. When this movement goes from house to house, sets up websites, has sermons going from mosque to mosque, even builds mosques, sets up Muslim centers targeting Muslim individuals, what we see is a Muslim individual who was initially not in the least interested in any kind of conflict between his religion and his daily life, but is put in that position because the fundamentalist is asking questions like, are you a true Muslim? And how do I know? And where do you belong? When that occurs, and it is happening to many, many Muslims, it's very important when you are challenged with, but it's in the Quran, do you truly believe in the Quran? Do you truly want to follow the instructions of Prophet Muhammad to say, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know that it's in the Quran, but I refuse to follow it. And it's that last part that most Muslims feel slightly weak and get weak-kneed and get confused and get recruited into the wrong side of things.
One of the things you suggest doing is you suggest that Christian churches reach out to Muslims to offer the Christian God as a substitute for Allah, and that Muslims consider converting to Christianity. That's a fairly controversial suggestion.
Readers of Infidel wrote back to me who resisted the siren song of the jihadists and said, I don't want it. They went to the Quran and checked it out. The jihadist was right. The instructions were in there. Muhammad did a series of things for jihad and has a series of demands. They were there. What these individuals, when they write to me, tell me is, it's fine. I've made up my mind about Islam. I don't want to be a Muslim, but Ayan, I also don't want to be like you. I don't want to be an atheist. I just don't want to. I believe that there is a force out there, a God, and many of them convert to Christianity. And the Christianity that they convert to, by the way, they're trying to appeal to me to also convert to Christianity, is it's a force for goodness. In the churches that these people go to, they don't find that there is discrimination of women or of gay people. They're not intolerant. So it is a modern, evolved, reformed Christianity that is tolerant, that is not hostile to science, but then at the same time gives ex-Muslims a spiritual crutch that they can lean on.
What about the option that does speak to a lot of Christians and Jews, or people who were brought up Christian or Jewish, who are not comfortable practicing the religion anymore? They often refer to themselves as culturally Jewish or culturally Christian. Could you be a cultural Muslim but not a religiously observant practicing Muslim?
All my Muslim friends are culturally Muslim. We sit on the ground, we make sweets, we feed each other a lot of food. It's just a sense of, oh yeah, we share familiar things from our past and the past of our parents and our grandparents. That's not the Islam that I'm against. The Islam that I'm against is the political side of Islam, the activist side. Distance yourself from the infidel, conquer non-Muslim countries, destroy Israel. America is the big Satan. Women must be covered. Gays must be thrown off the toilet. That form of intolerance is something that the Muslims that I associate with do not have. If it's about food and about art, if that's culturally Muslim, I have absolutely no problem with it. And there are many, many, many cultural. In fact, I think most Muslims are culturally Muslim, except that when these radical agents of Islam go to them and tell them, you're not a proper Muslim. And I feel that when you get an accusation like that, you should be immunized against it. You should be able to have to respond mentally in a strong way to tell that agent, I know scripture, I know what Muhammad said, and yet I think you should go away.